17, 1949. After Natty found Daddy's head in the toilet and Mother sent him to the hospital by ambulance and begged her neighbors to donate blood to keep him alive, Rose went to see him for herself. She found him in bed under an oxygen tent, pale and shaky. He had dark red spots, some flat, some raised, all over his body, and a trickle of blood from his nose. Rose could see a telltale trace of blood still on his lips. She immediately checked his pulse and respirations. She knew what this was. She'd seen it before. Harry was dying, bleeding from the inside out, from a disease caused by too few of the cells that clot the blood. The surgeon had removed Harry's spleen before Rose arrived. Rose pulled a chair up beside the bed. Harry lay on a thin mattress supported by iron head and footboards. His feet hung over the footboard. An oxygen tent covered him from his head to his knees. She placed an extra pillow under his ankle so his feet wouldn't get bed sores. She turned him back and forth to check his back and legs. Then she fluffed the pillows under his head. Harry gripped her hand weakly in his. "You look beautiful, my Rose. I love you," he whispered. "Save your breath, Harry. I'll give the children your love and come back in the morning," she answered, letting go of his hand. "Please don't leave me, Rose." He realized he'd said those same words before in many ways over the years, but Rose had left him anyway. "Will this time be any different?" "I must go talk to the children and explain what happened. They must be frantic. They'll be home from school soon," she remarked dispassionately, picking up her pocketbook from the chair. "Don't frighten them, Rose. I don't want them to worry about me," called Harry to her retreating back. During the next 2 weeks, Rose was permitted to nurse Harry exclusively. He recited poetry from Poe and Byron and whispered Gilbert and Sullivan songs from memory. "She walks in beauty like the night of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright meet her in aspect and her eyes, thus mellowed to that tender light which heaven to gaudy day denies." He whispered, "Rose, my beautiful Rose." All Rose could do was keep him comfortable. She arrived early every day in her white uniform cap and stockings after seeing the girls off to school, and left when it was time for them to come home. In the evening, Seal and Nathan made dinner for the girls. Rose went back to the hospital. Rose and Harry reminisced about when they'd met and their early days together. He couldn't speak without stopping to breathe. "I fell in love with you the minute I saw you, Rose. You were very handsome." "What happened, Rose? Why couldn't I give you the life you wanted and that I wanted you to have?" "It was that case, Harry, the one Bob gave you, wasn't it? You may think I forgave Bob no matter what he did, but I've never forgiven him for giving you that case. I've never told him that." "Did you really ever love me, Rose?" "Yes, Harry, I did, and still do in my own way." She was silent. Then, "I'm sorry for all the times I left you. None of it helped Abby." "That's all in the past now." He recited a few lines from Edgar Allan Poe's To One in Paradise, but Rose seemed unmoved. "Thou wast all that to me, love, for which my soul did pine. A green isle in the sea, love, a fountain and a shrine, all wreathed with fairy fruits and flowers, and all the flowers were mine." "You'll be better off without me, the girls too," he finished and lay back, spent. She didn't answer. Harry thought of the beautiful woman beside him. Through the oxygen tent, he saw a middle-aged woman all in white from her hair to her feet. Her green eyes were like lantern lights. He regretted dying without fixing their marriage. He knew he hadn't made her happy for a long time, and no matter how many more years he was given, he never could. As he lay dying, he silently forgave her neglect, her ignorance, and her selfishness. Many of his fights fights with Rose had been about money and why he couldn't earn more. Her brothers were her examples. Both Bob and Max were willing to bend the law quite far to accomplish their own ends. Harry had been a disappointment to himself and to Rose. He'd known that even as he lay in his hospital bed under an oxygen tent, bleeding internally, reciting love poems to the woman who'd once loved him. He wished he could see Natty again. Being under 18, she was not allowed to visit. He clutched the framed photographs of Abby and Natty Rose brought from home. He hoped Abby would find peace and Natty would know love. He knew he hadn't done enough. He knew he'd neglected his health because he was lonely and miserable. Now he understood he would deprive his children by his early death. Harry was grateful when the rabbi from their neighborhood synagogue appeared outside the oxygen tent. They prayed together. After the rabbi left, he thought about when Rose told him about her terminally ill private patient, who was actively dying until a breeze blew the curtains in and out on an otherwise still day. Neither of them believed in the supernatural, but Harry wondered if the same miracle might happen to him. Perhaps all his years as a religious Jew and the rabbi's intervention would convince God to let him live a little longer. Eddie, Seal, Nathan, and their neighbors gave blood, but none matched Harry's. Eddie tried to visit him every day. Rose would step out of the room to grab a cup of coffee or rest her feet, while Eddie bathed Harry, who was more comfortable with the young man than with anyone else, including his wife, touching him in private places. Although he was fading, Harry didn't want his lovely Rose to remember him that way. Eddie spoke to him as he helped him onto the bedpan or with the urinal. He told him funny stories and how much he loved Natty and hoped they'd have a future together. "I'll miss you, Mr. Leibowitz. Don't worry, I'll take care of Natty. She sends her love. It's not right that she shouldn't be able to visit you. She can't stand being away from you." Harry used what breath was left to him to impart advice. Like he'd done with his daughters, he told Eddie that books could salvage almost any miserable moment. Books can help you do what you don't have the money or the means to do. Music, especially opera, can whisk you away to far-off places. Harry also encouraged Eddie's plans for exploring his artistic talent and developing a business. "I know you'll take care of her, Eddie. You're a good man. Listen." Harry stuck his head outside the oxygen tent so Eddie could hear him better. "Stop boxing. Save your hands. Be the artist you want to be. Never lie. It's not worth it. And never let anyone intimidate you." Abby was allowed to visit her father because she was older than 18. She wasn't so cruel to tease her sister about not being able to go. She knew Natty would miss him more than she would. She went to the hospital for the last time toward the end. She wore a bright red dress, hoping to cheer him. She came alone and told her mother to take a break. Abby pulled a chair beside the bed and took Daddy's hand from under the oxygen tent. "Abby, my darling," he whispered when he woke to see her there. "Hello, Daddy. How beautiful you are and so grown up. How are you?" he asked in short gasps. "I'm fine, Daddy." "Daddy, I want you to know I'm sorry." "Shh, now," she said as she watched him struggling to comfort her. "I know you love me. I'm sorry I ruined your life by being sick and by taking Mother away so much to try to help me." Tears trickled down Harry's cheeks. "I don't want to make you cry. Please don't cry. I need to say these things for me as much as for you, Daddy. Maybe I'm being selfish. I want you to forgive me. I should have spent more time with you and showed you how much I love you. I was not a good daughter to you. I'm sorry." Harry was crying now and trying to catch his breath. A nurse came to the bedside. "Mr. Leibowitz, are you in pain?" "It's me. I'm his daughter. I made him cry. I shouldn't have come. I'm sorry. she said to the nurse and Harry, as she rose from the chair and walked away. He reached out for her, but didn't have the breath to call her back. The nurse sat in the chair Abby had left and tried to calm Harry into breathing more slowly. He watched the nurse through the oxygen tent as she checked his blood pressure and pulse. "I'm all right now. Thank you, nurse," he said in gasps. "It's not good for your breathing to upset yourself. Here, have some water." Harry gave up whatever will to fight he had left. It was over, his long struggle to make a life for his family, his marriage, and his illness. Eddie watched the man he would have liked to call his future father-in-law gradually merge with the sheets as his skin became paler each passing day. Soon, Harry had little breath to power words, so Eddie and Rose took turns talking to him, telling him what the girls were doing and reminding him that they sent their love. Rose counted Harry's thready pulse and waited patiently for each breath, watching his chest rise and fall gently. She'd think, "He's gone," but another breath would come until the very last. He lived until the bleeding in his brain drained his consciousness. Rose performed the post-mortem care. Other nurses tried to take over so she could sit quietly for a while, but she felt she owed him this, at least. Only when she was done bathing and wrapping him did she allow another nurse to take his body to the morgue. Rose left the hospital quietly to go home to the girls. Abby was not home, but Eddie and Natty were sitting in the small living room. Natty was in Harry's chair, waiting. Rose had told Natty she expected Harry to die any day, so Natty had waited, curled up in the handmade quilt, splattered with her father's dried blood, barely leaving his chair. She held the tie he had given her when they left for Cleveland the first time, close to her face, using it to absorb her tears. The funeral was held 24 hours later at the synagogue Harry had attended. Abby seemed sad, but unable to handle the stress of the death and the idea of the funeral. Rose told her she could stay home. Natty barely got through it, and then only with Eddie's help. She was glad he had the chance to get to know her father and that they had liked each other. Rose sincerely grieved for Harry, but was not surprised by his death. If he hadn't died as he did, he would have died before long of complications from diabetes. By the time Natty found his head in the toilet, he'd been bloated, weak, pale, and had multiple sores on his feet. His erythematous legs seeped with clear fluid. Until the end, he'd never stopped eating foods loaded with sugar, despite entreaties from Rose and Natty. Throughout the funeral ceremony and the burial, Rose contemplated the future. She kept Harry's tefillin and phylacteries. She made sure Harry was buried in his tallit or prayer shawl after one of the fringes had been removed. He had done his best to remain a pious Jew. Her guilt compelled her to bury him the way he'd have wanted. Rose thought the first thing she would do was stop preparing kosher food. She hated cooking. She'd asked Laura to buy her a new sink, a smaller one that didn't accommodate kosher rituals. Rose knew she couldn't remain single for long. Her brothers had been generous, and her work in the emergency room largely sustained them. But she was getting older and didn't know how much longer she could bear the physically taxing work. She thought about what to do next. "I could go back to private duty, but it's also hard work. I'm not so young anymore. What about Abby? She needs me. Natty's still too young to be left home alone, especially now that she has a boyfriend. Natty will complain if I tell her she's got to go back to Cleveland." She thought about Harry's cousin Herman, a retired police detective living in Brownsville. Rose had frequently taken the girls to visit Herman and his wife Jenny on Saturdays, when Harry was at the store or in shul. They had a big house and four children. Harry hadn't liked this cousin. He considered him unsavory, so Rose and the girls went without him. Rose thought she'd go alone now. She sensed Harry's disapprobation. Sometimes she felt like Harry was watching her through Natty's eyes. As preposterous as it was, she thought Natty was somehow channeling her father's disapproval. These were the matters occupying her thoughts as she observed the funeral and burial rituals for her husband of 23 years.